Stampede Blue. What we talking about? Indianapolis, AFC South. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Topics, loaded like offense. Colt-centric, talk about it often. Stampede Blue, let's air it out. Fly route, let's air it out. Do it big, like lines for an offense.
Welcome back to the Stampede Blue podcast channel, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host tonight, Matt Dainley. We've got a little bit of a mashup here between the Colts cast and Horseshoes with Holder. Stephen Holder is joining us on the line. Stephen, what's up, man?
I'm doing well, Matt. Thanks for having me. How are things?
Good, good. Very good. Thank you for coming on the show tonight, or joining me on our show tonight, I guess. I'm trying to figure out how to exactly illustrate that verbally or whatever. Not used to doing that, but... Colts this week take on the Dallas Cowboys. Kind of a very, I mean, in my opinion, it's a very interesting matchup against a couple teams that, you know, kind of have interesting aspects to their defense. I wouldn't say any similarities necessarily offensively, but it's definitely going to be interesting challenges for each offense, I think, against the respective defenses that they're going to be going up against. First and foremost, let's kind of get this out of the way before we go any further. Interesting on the Colts side of things with the injury report. What did you see down there in the way of heading into this Week 15 matchup with the Cowboys?
Well, I think there's some good news with Ryan Kelly. I mean, we're recording this on Thursday evening, but he's been limited the past 2 days, but he's been out there. I have a good feeling about Ryan Kelly. He's got a little bit of a bounce in his step this week when I talked to him, and I saw a lot of positivity. So I think he's going to play. The guy that's always a mystery sometimes is T.Y. Hilton. He's missed a couple practices now, and he left the game the other day briefly with the ankle. And, you know, there's certainly cause for concern. Mm-hmm. But the other side of that coin is, what have we learned about T.Y. Hilton? Okay, when the guy's banged up and we sit here and we're like, man, you know, maybe he won't play. This might be the week. And what does he do? He goes out and he does what he did last week. He goes for 199 in Houston. You know, he was questionable mm-hmm. on the injury report last week. Okay, questionable. Mm-hmm. And the guy has damn near a career game. So T.Y. has a habit of that. He's pound for pound, he's as tough as they come in the NFL. Now, there's not a lot of pounds there, but as he can only give you what he can, and the guy shows up every week, that's the bottom line. So I've learned my lesson with T.Y., and it's basically to always assume he's going to play unless you know differently. The other thing I'd mention, though, is I do worry about Mark Lewinsky. Haven't seen or heard much about him this week, and they've been looking at Joe Haig in there as a possible replacement at right guard. So I would prepare for that possibility. That may be a little bit of a shakeup, especially with the running game trying to get going.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it says that he's been battling an ankle injury, and it says that they seem to be pretty, you know, regardless of what direction they go there at right guard, it seems like they're pretty confident in the options that they've got, at least. You know what? It's strange to sit here and say in Week 15, after we didn't even expect this guy to probably ever step on the field, that, you know, the Colts might be, you know, at a disadvantage without Mark Glinski on the field. I mean, I can't even believe that just came out of my mouth, but he's been had a hell of a year.
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about Glinski is it just kind of happened. It was like they needed him to play 1 week. They put him out there, and then it was like, oh, wait, he can play. And it just kind of happened. Like, I mean, it was like we went from saying, oh, my God, they're going to have to play Mark Glinski to, oh, my God, Mark Lewinsky is a free agent at the end of the year. Did you know that? Mm. It's like, and by the way, that's a nice segue to something that I think we've kind of put on the back burner, and it probably should be, but before long, they're going to have to kind of cope with that reality that Mark Lewinsky will be a free agent. That's kind of a sort of under the radar story in this coming offseason. That's something to think about. I think the Colts can lock him up. I think they should lock him up. But at least certainly for at least a short-term deal of some kind, if they're not, you know, sold on maybe a very long-term deal. But they need to find a way to get him back on this roster and have some continuity with this offensive line, because he's been a part of it. There's no question about it. I don't think we should sell him short.
Right. I agree. Kind of the just kind of wrapping up the rest of the injury report, at least for Thursday here. Mike Mitchell was the other one who did not practice today, along with Glowinski and Hilton. Mo Alie-Cox at tight end, you know, he was limited apparently with his calf injury, which is kind of interesting now that we have Eric Swope no longer on the Colts roster, and he was picked up the other day. Who picked him up? Now my mind totally went blank.
The Saints.
That's right. I don't know why I think I was thinking of Darryl Daniels for some reason. The Seattle Seahawks came to my brain, but yeah. So the Saints have him now. That doesn't look to be, you know, he's not going to be a guy that's going to be traveling back and forth now between the rosters. But Clayton Gathers was also limited with his knee issue. Malik Hooker with his hip. Marcus Hunt. Ryan Kelly, as you mentioned, and Sky Moore with his neck injury. But Dontrell Inman was back in the lineup. What do you think that spells, if anything, for Darius Fountain?
Well, probably not the greatest news for Darius Fountain, but we'll see. I will say this for Frank Reich. I mean, he does have a unique ability to get a lot of guys involved. And they've played a lot of receivers, you know, even on a week-to-week basis. Even weeks when they've had, like, three or four tight ends up and active for a game, they've still managed, you know, to get a number of receivers on the field. I mean, there are times when, you know, they've played T.Y. Hilton, Chester Rogers, Inman, Ryan Grant. You know, they've Zach Pascal. I mean, they've played five receivers some days. So they've gotten a lot of guys involved, and I don't think there's any reason that would not continue. So I still think it's possible Darius gets involved. The one thing the Colts do is they have certain personnel groupings that they like, and they're all over the place. Mm-hmm. So there's no guarantee, I guess, that he would not be a part of one of those in the weeks to come. Is it likely? Well, we'll see, but certainly possible. So I think there's still a chance that Fountain gets involved here going forward. If nothing else, I think it's good for him to get this opportunity to be on the active roster, travel, go on the road, be part of pregame, you know, all that stuff, even, you know, running down and covering a kick or two. It really does, I think, serve as an icebreaker for him and at least sets the table for next year. So these reps are important wherever they come. However few they are, they're important for Reese Fountain.
Absolutely. And like you mentioned, you know, it kind of, you know, bodes well for him getting into next year. You know, obviously it's too quick to really discern anything about next year. But, you know, they love his talent. They love his upside. And you've got to hope. And they've been kind of chatting him up about his growth, you know, throughout the year. So you kind of makes you feel like he's a guy who, you know, is pretty strong consideration for a roster spot next year, especially as a second-year player. But, you know, when you've got that kind of talent, you hope that he can kind of mold himself into kind of the complete player, I guess, at least to be, you know, maybe a third, fourth option at the very minimum and can still grow throughout the year. So I'm excited to actually see him, you know, participate, I guess you could say, in the game, as in getting a reception, seeing what he can do after the catch, just out of raw ability, if nothing else. And I think that the Colts are probably looking forward to that too. I won't be surprised if he gets some action this week, although, like you said, I wouldn't expect it necessarily or anything like that. But something kind of to lead into as we, you know, jump out of the injury issues is the Colts now come into this game in week 15 against the Dallas Cowboys. The Colts put up their only in their last five games. This is only their second 400-yard total yard game last week against Houston. Win that 24-21. Coming in the Dallas Cowboys, this is going to be a real battle for the Colts offense against this Dallas Cowboys defense, who has been pretty impressive overall. I mean, they are, you know, they haven't allowed more than 23 points in their last five games. That's pretty impressive just in general. You see that their rushing defense is solid. You see that their pass defense is pretty good. But their offense has been a little inconsistent as well. So this is an interesting game for the Colts, I think, where you see that you're going to have Andrew Luck in this offense going up basically a mirror as far as scheme against what they see every day in practice. How can they do that with some better playmakers? I mean, we know that the talent overall on Dallas's defense is better than the Colts' current talent pool, I guess you could say, in terms of throughout the defense. So this is going to be a very interesting game coming into this. And, you know, the Colts, are they hot again? And you know, are we thinking, or are they going to, you know, fall back into a little bit of what they did against Jacksonville and maybe the first quarter of against the Texans? What do we think? What's your thought process coming into this?
Well, I think this is a really interesting matchup. I think the Colts, I actually think they match up pretty well against Dallas. I think, you know, first of all, if you look at Dallas's offense, first of all, it's constructed very similarly to Houston, and the Colts performed well there. You know, right. I think, you know, certainly the wide receiver playmaker, somewhat mobile quarterback, not as mobile as Watson certainly, but Dak can move around and make plays on the run. And then you've got the running game you got to contend with. So very similar challenge there. And then, as you said, the scheme on defense, it's exactly what they run, right? I mean, that's really where it was derived from, is the Dallas scheme. So I think the Colts are going to be well-equipped, I think, to go out and attack Dallas. And that's where it's going to be interesting. One thing I'd say is I don't want to make too much of this because I don't think it's necessarily going to decide the game. But Matt Eberflus is an interesting variable here, the Colts defensive coordinator. He's going to be able to help Frank Reich figure out how to attack that defense. Mm-hmm. And I really think he's going to be a little bit of a weapon for Frank Reich. And Frank Reich said that earlier this week. He said that he had been, you know, spending a lot of time consulting with Matt Eberflus this week. And I mean, it's only wise to try to take advantage of that. And I really do think that is a possible variable in this game. I think it's something that you have to try to take advantage of. The Cowboys, as a lot of experts have said, they're playing more man coverage right now, and that's something the Colts don't do as much of. So that's the difference in their schemes. But certainly in the front seven, it's very, very similar. And I just think they're going to be well positioned to figure out how to attack that scheme. Now, whether they execute and all that, well, that's up to the players. But from a you know, game planning standpoint, I feel like the Colts are in good shape, and they have a chance here to have a little bit of an upper hand, and we'll see. As you said, the Cowboys have more talent, but certainly from a game planning and strategic standpoint, I think the Colts have some advantages.
I agree, and I don't think that you'll find too many Colts fans that would say that Matt Eberflus has been anything short of really good this year. You know, you don't want to call him great, but he's been really good. And here's an interesting aspect of about what he's done lately. And I think that most, even just casual fans, will notice this. And I want your take on this, actually. We saw him dial up the pressure against Tennessee, and it worked. We saw him dial it up again last week against Houston, and it worked. With a running back like Ezekiel Elliott, when they need that pressure to reroute him in the backfield, when they need to get into Dak's chin, all that stuff, do you see them doing that again this week? I think that I do.
I think so, and I think with Dak, I think one of the things you want to do is make him make decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And if you give him extra time in the pocket, he's savvy enough that he's going to find the open guy. I mean, he's got decent pocket presence and things of that nature. So if you let him sit back there and get comfortable, he's good enough to pick you apart. So I don't think they're going to do it a lot. I mean, look, when they do blitz, it's only a handful of times
right.
per game. They are statistically – they blitz less than any team in the NFL, and it's like by far, not even close.
Right.
I checked the numbers.
Right.
I mean, I've checked the percentages. I mean, there's something like, you know, in the 15% range right now. But the point is, when they, it's more about picking your spots, and that's where Matt Eberflus has been really good. He has that for knowing when to turn up the pressure. I think he has some guys now who have settled into some really interesting roles. Two guys to watch. Kenny Moore, as I think you mentioned, and Darius Leonard also. Those two guys have been kind of the Swiss Army knife type guys for Matt Eberflus. And I like the fact now that they're far enough into the season and far enough into their first year in this scheme that one of the things Matt Eberflus told me this week was, look, we've had all this stuff in the playbook all year long. But one thing we couldn't do was we weren't comfortable enough to dial it up yet. Now they are. They're 13 games in, so they're at a point where they feel like, you know what, we're comfortable enough, we can go to some of the other things in our package. And so you're seeing that now. It's not new. They haven't installed anything. They really haven't. They did it, you know, back in training camp when you and I were standing there on the sideline. Mm-hmm. They did it then, but we're only seeing it now because they feel they have a comfort level in running it now. So I just think that Matt Eberflus has just gotten this is not necessarily your question, but one thing to add here is that I feel as though he has gotten so much out of this scheme, so much out of these players, really, is what I should say. I looked at the starting lineup, for example, from last Sunday in Houston. 7 of the 11 players were guys who were on this roster last year. Yet they were playing for a defense that looked like it was headed nowhere, right? It mm-hmm. looked like it was irredeemable. And yet here we are. Now, they have some huge additions, clearly, right? I mean, Darius Leonard is not a small addition. You know, Tyquan Lewis, for example, that's a big addition there, right?
Right.
There's some guys like that. But at the same time, the basis of this defense, the lion's share of this personnel, are guys who were holdovers from last year and really didn't give them anything. Okay, take, for example, Marcus Hunt. Okay, Marcus Hunt was a non-factor at times last year. Mm-hmm. And Marcus Hunt has had just an incredible season. So what's changed? The scheme has changed. The coaching has changed. There's accountability. There's certainly they're using players in a different fashion. I just think that, you know, a guy like, for example, Anthony Walker is such a great example. You know, I put this in a story, on one of my stories this week on The Athletic. And one little nugget I threw in there was, there was talk from the previous staff, coaching staff, that Anthony Walker wasn't a fit and maybe they should cut him. Hmm. Okay, thank God. Chris Ballard said, not no, but hell no. And now Anthony Walker is one of their biggest playmakers on this defense. So I just think a lot of that is due to, number one, these guys are talented, but it's also a matter of Matt Eberflus bringing that talent out of them and putting them in position to succeed. And you're seeing the product of that now.
Absolutely. And, you know, the Colts have only allowed 100 rushing yards to the Miami Dolphins since the bye week. I mean, nobody else has gotten to 100 yards on them. Another interesting part about this is that the Colts finally kind of lost that streak through 12 games of forcing a turnover in every single game last week. I don't know. I think that was a little, you know, one of those streaks that just happened to continue. But at the same time, it was very obvious that this is what this team is built on, and forcing turnovers and being, you know, a team that is very opportunistic defensively. I love what the defense has been able to do, quite honestly. And I think that a lot of fans right now, especially when you look at what they're, I think they're at like 3.7 rushing yards per attempt that they're allowing defensively. That is a massive turnaround from what the Colts have done in the past. And I think that all inclusively, you look at this team defensively and you think, look, there is reason to be optimistic, even with some of the areas that need help. But when you look at some of the defensive players like Anthony Walker, like you mentioned, Darius Leonard, obviously, and you look at just kind of Kenny Moore and the way that he's able to kind of fill what, you know, Nate Hairston did last year in terms of being able to come off the edge a little bit there and force some pressure, but also be a really good coverage guy, better than Hairston was last year by far. You just have to be confident in this defense going forward. And then you see the complementary part of that where they run next to this offense with Andrew Luck on it, and you have to love their chances now. Coming into the Cowboys here, it really makes you wonder, can the Colts continue to do all this without their running game? Because right now their running game is the biggest issue, in my opinion, that they have. Now, nationally you hear people say, well, they haven't been protecting Andrew Luck the past couple games. They gave up a few sacks, you know, 2 weeks ago. They gave up 2 last week. I mean, let's not say they're not protecting him. Andrew Luck is dropping back as much as he has been in the past. I'm not worried about 5 sacks in 2 games. Now, should that continue to where they earn or lose, you know, or I'm sorry, if Andrew Luck were to get sacked another 3 times this week, yeah, you might say that there's an issue up front somehow, but you see why that is. you know that Ryan Kelly's out. You know that Glowinski has or was injured, and he may have, you know, Haig step in there or whatever. One way or another, this running game has got to get it figured out, man. I think that people got really excited about those 200-yard plus games, and you see a couple 100-yard games from Mac in general, and he just looks soft right now.
Yeah, it's not good. But you know, one there's a couple of things going on here. Certainly, there's the fact that it's a product of who they played in part. Mm-hmm. Okay, so Jacksonville and Houston back to back. Okay, they're not a good team. But when you look at who they have up front, I mean, look, they're going to have days where it's tough sledding. I remember Frank Gore telling me on multiple occasions going into games against Jacksonville, Frank Gore, okay, future Hall of Famer, one of the all-time greats, he would say with no shame that he hated playing the Jacksonville Jaguars. He said, man, I hate playing these guys more than anybody in the league just because they were so physical up front. I mean, that's a hell of a compliment from an all-time great. So that's some context on you know, the type of competition they faced. Obviously, last week, Houston came in determined not to allow the Colts to run the ball. And that was certainly priority number one for them. I don't know that I agree with that tactic because they certainly didn't make it tough on T.Y. Hilton and the guys on the perimeter. So I'm not exactly sure where they were going with that. But that was certainly their goal. And I thought some days it's just like that. But – you know, the question then is, can you make them pay? And the Colts did. Mm-hmm. They did not do that against Jacksonville. So if the Cowboys come up with a similar approach, the question is going to be, can they make them pay? But you are right. Look, I mean, they're facing, this is going to be, you know, I talked about the string of competition they've been facing. Well, it ain't getting easier.
Right.
Okay, the Cowboys are number one in rushing yards per attempt defensively.
Mm-hmm.
Rushing in terms of rushing defense, they're number one. The biggest test of all. Now, what's interesting here, though, is you're still seeing a consistent and concerted effort by Frank Reich to run the ball. The rushing attempts are still there. Now, the results are not, but the attempts are. Now, why does that matter, and why is he so stubborn about it? Because I think you saw earlier in the year Frank Reich get away from the run when it wasn't working. And what happened there is, well, first of all, they lost most of those games.
Right.
Okay, that's number one.
Yep.
Number two, he made his offense a little too predictable. Now, he still maintains, I think, the mystery by continuing to, you know, to be, you know, sort of consistent with the attempts to run the ball. It may only get them 2 yards, but they're still going to try. And I think that is a really important issue for Frank Reich. He's got to be disciplined about that. He's got to maintain at least some mystery for the defense so they can't necessarily tee off and know what's coming. So I think you're going to see him continue to do that and just be consistent with at least his attempts to run the football. But they at some point have to have some success and take some of the heat off of Andrew Luck. I think they can do that, but this is going to be a tall order this week.
Absolutely. Folks, we're going to take a quick break for our Tick Pick ad, and then we'll be right back with more from Stephen Holder. All right, Colts fans, we have a great deal for you. Let me tell you guys about Tick Pick, this amazing app to buy tickets to any game, concert, or other event. Are you looking for tickets to this week's game and want to know exactly what you're going to pay for those tickets? I do, and if you do too, then TickPick and their amazing and simple app is right up your alley. The TickPick app is extremely easy to use, and best of all, there are absolutely no surprises at checkout. Listen, you find the game, find the seats you want, and you're all set. Think StubHub without any fees. You get the same tickets, same seller, but absolutely zero fees. You save 10 to 15% on every ticket order. And get this, for our listeners, they're offering you an amazing offer of $15 off any single order over $99 through the end of the season. All you have to do is enter SB Colts as your gift code at checkout. This isn't a sign-up only offer either. They went all in for you guys. Not only do I use TickPick, but I approached them and wanted to get the word out on this company because it was so stinking easy and nobody likes to find the season seats they want, then get that smack in the face at checkout of another $35 to $50 in fees being added. I'll never use another ticket app again. It's very user-friendly, and you get the same great tickets with lightning-quick ticket transfers. Remember, that's TickPick, and use the gift code SBColts to save yourself $15 on any order over $99. Go to TickPick and take advantage of this offer today, 100% verified Colts tickets without any fees. All right, folks, we're back. Steven, let's continue on with the defense here, talking about the Cowboys. They forced 9 turnovers in their last 6 games. The Colts have 6, I think, in their last 6. Their defense is becoming not just opportunistic, but this is becoming a real, you know, confidence builder, I think, for their defense. You mentioned that their rushing yards, they are the best in the league. They've only given up 4 100-yard games all year defensively on the ground. So this is a very tall order here. You mentioned earlier, before we got on the show here, you were talking about the Colts and how they continue with Frank Reich running this hurry-up offense and how well that played out last week for them against the Texans. That seems to be Andrew Luck's kind of that seems to be his wheelhouse. Is that something that we can expect to see this week? And if the Colts start turning the ball over, that's going to be detrimental, and that's probably going to switch up the game plan a bit.
Yeah, that's always a variable, obviously, turnovers. But against an opportunistic defense, you know, you've got to have a heightened sense of alert. So that's something I'm sure they're drilling in practice this week. But in terms of the hurry up, it's an interesting conversation. Look, that was absolutely very effective last week, and it's led to a lot of questions I've gotten, and I've heard a lot of conversation about this. Man, why don't they do that more? And I get it, and I wonder to some extent too. And so I asked that question this week. Frank, what the heck, man? Why don't you just do that all the time? Which sounds easy, but there's obviously you have to have at least, you know, some judicious approach, okay, with the no huddle. Number one, if you're not successful, obviously, if you don't get first downs, your defense is right back on the field, right? And you're 3 and out, and they get 2 minutes rest, and they're back out there, right? So that's not really productive for your defense, and that's not what we call complementary football, right? I mean, right. You know, Frank Reich might be the head coach, but he might be the play caller on offense, but he's also the head coach. He's got to be worried about both sides of the ball. So that's the obvious one that every coach will tell you. But what's unique about the Colts and the reason Frank Reich is one to kind of pick his spots with the no huddle is this. The fundamental sort of cornerstone of their offense is multiplicity. They want multiple sets, multiple formations, multiple personnel groupings. They want to switch it up. They want to keep you guessing. And one of the ways to keep you guessing is to trade personnel in and out and run different personnel groupings in and out of the game. Mm-hmm. And if you watch the Colts, you see that all day long. Well, when you get in no huddle, you kind of have to roll with the guys you have, because the whole idea is to keep the defense from substituting. So it becomes sort of difficult for you to then, you know, be a sort of multiple personnel offense when you're running the no huddle. You're kind of stuck in the personnel you're in. So if you're in a 3 wide receiver, one tight end set, well, that's what you got, and that's what it is. Right. Now, they still have a lot of success in it, and we've seen that. But one of the things that I think Nyheim Hines brought this up this week, he said, you know, now one area where they can have success with the no huddle is, he says, you know, sometimes they catch the defense in a personnel grouping for them, which is not advantageous for the defense. And so sometimes the Colts have the upper hand. Maybe they're outnumbering. Maybe they don't have, you know, the right personnel group in. Maybe they have them in a nickel, and the Colts go with something that counters that well, for example, just or whatever it might be. But basically what they'll do is, if they catch the defense off guard in a personnel group that the Colts like, then they go – that's one of the opportunities for them to go no huddle.
Right.
And say, you know what, we got them. We got an upper hand here. We got an advantage. Let's go no huddle. And that way you maintain that advantage for the rest of that series. So they picked their spots, and the one thing that you know is that Andrew Luck really does get into a rhythm, and he really excels in the no huddle. But I did want to address that because I know it's something when you see them have the kind of success they did, you obviously human nature is to ask the question, okay, why aren't we doing this more? And so that's what it is. But I do think Frank Reich's coming around, and I think he'll look for more opportunities to do no huddle.
Yeah, I do too. And it's interesting when you think about the different matchups that the Colts do see and that they do feel that it's advantageous or whatever to, you know, continue a no huddle. I think a little bit of that may have gone away without Eric Swope. Now, Swope wasn't a big contributor this year. Mo Alie-Cox has kind of taken his spot, you know, as the guy that can stretch the field and has some speed and some hands and some leaping ability. But you've got Eric Ebron there, who has just had a phenomenal freaking season this year. It has just been amazing to watch. I mean, can the Colts continue to do this without Jack Doyle? You know, Ryan Hewitt is literally limited to being a blocker. I don't think he's caught a pass all year. I mean, can they do that with just two viable tight ends, Steven? I mean, it makes me wonder, honestly, if they can do that, because when you get into, you know, trying to kind of mismatch with wide receivers only and just one tight end, I think you lose the ability to do that quite a bit. Even when you just feel like, okay, well, we've got – I don't like the way he covers, but this is our personnel. I think that's a real back and forth for Frank Reich to discern between when they get into those positions.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think they feel pretty confident about their situation, but there is no question that they have at times on Sundays had four tight ends active for a game, right? I mean,
right.
That has been very common for them. Right now, they're pretty much going to be limited to three. Mm-hmm. Mo Alie-Cox, I expect him to play this week, and certainly Ebron and Hewitt, as you mentioned. But so, first of all, I'll kind of clean up the Eric Swope situation. So here's what I was told. It's not that they don't like Eric Swope. The problem with Eric Swope is more physical than anything else. He's recovered from his injury, the knee issue. Well, I don't know if recovered is the word, but he was back. He was playing. But apparently they feel as though it's had a big impact and he's lost a step. Now, back to where he was remains to be seen, but he's probably not going to be able to do it in the final 3 weeks of the season. Now, this has been an ongoing thing for the past year for Eric Swope. He's been dealing with this knee issue, and I think they're starting to wonder if he can be the same guy. It's really unfortunate because they really like Eric Swope. I mean, they didn't enjoy making this decision. This was a pretty tough decision internally to waive him this week. But Eric Swope, I think, as you said, you talked about Mo Alie-Cox taking his position. Well, there's two reasons why. It's physical. Mo Alie-Cox just, you know, right now being the better athlete and being in better health. And also Mo Alie-Cox is the superior blocker.
Right, it's funny.
Mo Alie-Cox is still a raw football player, or was, you know, much like Eric Swope was a former basketball player. But he has really evolved into a very reliable blocker. And they're just really thrilled with him as a blocker right now. So he gives them a lot of versatility, and he's a key guy right now. He takes Jack Doyle's spot, really, not Ebron. It's really Mo Alie-Cox taking his spot because Jack Doyle was sort of the dual-purpose tight end. Well, that guy has to be Mo Alie-Cox now. So he's got a big role going forward down the stretch here. So anyhow, as it relates to your question, I mean, can they do it with these tight ends? I think that Frank Reich, he's got enough versatility in his offense that he can make it work. Is it ideal? No, but I think they can make it work. I mean, they can still – they have enough versatility with these three tight ends that they can still do all they like to do with their tight ends. It's all still on the table for them. So I don't think they lose anything that way. He may just have fewer options. Maybe he likes one guy better than another for a certain type of play or call, that kind of thing. So you may lose some options that way. But in terms of wanting to do the things that they do with their tight ends, all of that's still on the table for them with the group that they have.
Mm-hmm. And real quick before we head back to, I want to talk more, a little bit more about Frank Reich and what he's going to be facing coming up here. But I just found it really gratifying, I guess, to see guys like Al-Kadeem Mohammed, the mixture of Teray, Sheard, Marcus Hunt, all these guys that are up front here. Tyquan Lewis especially, you definitely see what he's going to offer in the future. This is a fun group to look at right now. And I don't think that when Al-Kadeem Mohammed came in that anybody thought he was going to be as much of a production type guy as he is. And I guess in this sense, I'm just meaning production in terms of snaps. But he has been a guy, all of these guys have really worked really well and gelled well together. And I think that is something, and another kind of feather you can put in Matt Eberflus's hat to not only getting some of the guys that he inherited in this system, but the guys that have come in via Ballard, you know, moving around some pieces and plugging them in and making this front seven a real decent squad. I mean, this is not what people expected out of this group coming into this season.
No, it really isn't. But the one thing I'd say is, I felt like on paper in the offseason, I felt on paper that the defensive line could be the deepest unit on this team.
Mm-hmm.
And I think before the injuries hit, maybe you could argue it was tight end, and maybe it was. But certainly the choice is tight end or defensive line. It really has lived up to that depth projection, I would say.
I agree.
And the one thing I would add is that it really is a by-committee group. Now, you're starting to see guys like Janico Autry, for example, become individual standouts. And I also have to shout out Jabal Sheard, who has quietly all year long, I think, been very, very steady as a productive guy against the run. Very productive.
I agree.
And also quietly as a pass rusher, maybe not in terms of sack numbers, but pressures. He has been very consistent. By the way, Jabal Sheard and I believe Marcus Hunt are tied with 13 tackles for losses each. And that they're both top 10 in the NFL league-wide, by the way. So they're getting the job done. But it really is a group that the Colts felt strong about coming into the season, and it's lived up to it. And it's funny, as I said, they're not doing it. They don't have a DeMarcus Lawrence on this group, right? I mean, they don't have, you know, sort of that primo guy. When you turn on the tape, you're like, okay, we're doubling that guy because he's a monster. They don't have a guy like that. They're doing this by committee. But you mentioned Al-Kadeem Mohammed. Listen, I'll be honest. I didn't know anything about this guy when he got here.
I don't think anybody did.
I had to go watch tape of him. I literally went and watched tape, and I was like, you know what? I think I like this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I had zero impression about him until that day. And I watched it, and I said, you know, he moves pretty good. He's got some quickness. I mean, I could see him making a play or two. And then he goes out there, and now he's playing like 30 snaps a game. I mean, it's crazy.
It is.
So it really has been an evolution for him. But remember, that happened after Jihad Ward went down. Remember, Jihad Ward was starting to really come on, and then he had that really severe ankle injury.
Mm-hmm.
But they still have his rights, and he's been rehabbing every day and getting better and better by the day. But my point is, it's been really a by committee approach, and as you mentioned, Al-Kadeem Mohammed is just such a great example of one guy, you know, seizing an opportunity. But they all have their roles, and they all take turns kind of shining on that defensive line. That, I think, is talent starting to show through, but it's also, again, it goes back to, I think, coaching and giving guys opportunities who earn the opportunities, you know, and they have to then do their part, and they are.
Yep, and, you know, you kind of look at some of these guys that have gone down this year, and even a guy like Carroll Phillips, you know, that he didn't get a lot of time, and it would just seem like he fit right in though when he did come in. So I think there's a lot of credit that needs to be given to Matt Eberflus. You know, the Colts aren't a top five defense, you know, overall necessarily, but they are a very competitive group. They do turn the ball over. They're tough against the run. As you mentioned, I wrote something about them earlier this week actually, about how impressive they've been with their tackles for loss and how many they've got. I think they're in the mid 60s right now, with, or even higher than that, because they had like almost 12 tackles for loss last week, 11 and a half, if I'm not mistaken. I mean, that's
right. I mean, they're number two in the league on the season. I mean, it's impressive.
It is crazy. So that side of the ball is very fun to watch right now, just in general. And now you look at what Frank Reich has in front of him. He's got the Dallas Cowboys, who, and let's just look at the last three here, just kind of as a whole for just a second. Dallas Cowboys, the New York Giants, and the Tennessee Titans. Seven weeks ago, you look at these three and you think the Colts are going to run the table on these three. But the Cowboys have been playing better than they have all year. The New York Giants are considerably better than they played in the first half of the season. And the Tennessee Titans are very here and there. I mean, there's really no take on them. You never know what you're going to get with them. But this is not the way, and this is not output from these teams that I don't think that anybody expected at the beginning of the season, midway through, or the halfway point in the season. So this is Frank Reich's biggest challenge here. He's got to go up against a good defense. He's going to have to find a way to get them to stop, you know, through Matt Eberflus in this defense, to stop New York Giants offense, who has been actually putting some points up lately. So there's a lot on Frank Reich's table right now, and he is in the thick of the AFC wild card hunt. He is going to have to put forward his best three games, I think, of the season in here to win out. Because look, the Titans, it doesn't matter if the Colts just don't blow teams out like that very often. So we can almost count that out. That's not going to happen again. When you have a divisional game in there, you've got two good teams who are on the rise in terms of where they were, like I said, 6-7 weeks ago. This is going to be a tall task to finish the season 10-6. And I think, I just don't think that the Colts can be in the playoffs if they don't go 10-6.
Yeah, these three games will tell us a lot about this team. Mm-hmm. If they can run the table, then I think we know this team has the mental fortitude to do just about anything. We know that this is the team that can go in the playoffs. If they win these next three, this is a team that I say can go in the playoffs and they can win a game.
Yep.
And be a very dangerous team.
I was just going to say that. They'll be considered one of the most dangerous teams in the playoffs simply because they're an underdog.
Right, exactly. But an underdog that is on a hell of a streak, right?
Right.
I mean, if they go 10-6, that means what they would have won nine of 10 or something like that.
Wait,
right.
What
so
is that? What is
I mean,
that?
One, you know, two, well, that three. Stacks up against anybody. Okay. Like literally anybody in the NFL.
Yeah.
And so now here's the thing. So Frank Reich, okay. One thing he has done is he's gotten them to believe. Okay. Think about this now. We talked about the run that they've been on, but let's not forget, 1-5 is a very dark place. Okay.
Yeah.
1-5, man. I mean, that is a lonely, lonely place. And he got this team to stay the course. And it was almost frustrating at times where, you know, you'd ask Frank Reich, hey, are you going to try this? Are you going to do this? Are you going to shake things up? What are you going to do? And he'd say, no, we're just going to stay, we're going to stay the course. We're going to do what we've been doing. And on the one hand, you'd be like, man, this guy's crazy. On the other hand, you realize that's exactly what they needed to do, right?
Right.
And so here they are now with an opportunity, to do something special. And I think they have the right guy in charge. He has gotten them to understand the value of staying the course and just continuing to do what works. And believing in what you do. And it's really a culture. It really boils down to that becoming cultural and understanding this is not about, getting, sidetracked when things don't go well. The coach, players look to the coach and they take their cues from him. And if the coach stays the course, and he's got a stiff chin, you know, when a stiff upper lip, you know, when bad times come, the players are going to feed off of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what's really happening. So now this is a time where that becomes really valuable. That ability of Frank Reich to really just kind of be steady and calm in the middle of the storm, that's where this is going to really, I think, show up. And his team has got to feed off that, and they have. That's the reason they're here. So I think they got the right man to lead them at a time like this, and it's going to be a real test. It's going to teach us a lot about this team.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And two of these three are home games, so this is something where you have to expect the Colts really to take advantage of every possible advantage they've got in any of these games. You know, they've got the superior offense, in my opinion, the Colts do, even though they have a lack of playmakers. They have, I think, Dallas's potential is greater because they've got more playmakers. So you run into that. And you've got, on the other side of the ball for them, you've got the more spread out, higher amount of talent. But it just, I fail to see that the Cowboys are a better team, that if they played 10 times, that the Colts wouldn't win 6 or 7 of those, you know. So I think, and I think that they could win a couple of them handily, to be quite honest with you, with Andrew Luck behind center. So it makes you wonder. There is a very good opportunity here for them to win out. If they don't, they're in a real pickle, I think, in terms of playoff berth potential. But man, I don't think that any Colts fan right now looks at this team and looks at this head coach and looks at this GM and doesn't think, we are going to be pretty damn good pretty quick, regardless of playoff potential this year. So this is one of the most exciting things, I think, for Indianapolis Colts fans going into not only the postseason here, but looking ahead and all the potential that they've got. You have to feel, after years of feeling like they were never going to get on the right track, and that a simple hire of a GM, a simple hire of a new head coach, all that stuff seemed like such a process, and you're seeing instant results almost, and it just really surrounds the team and the fan base, in my opinion. And this is a really exciting final stretch to the season for the first time in a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I know I'm excited. I mean, I think as a reporter, for example, I mean, you want to cover and write about and be involved in situations that are meaningful, right? And
right.
These games are meaningful. It's as meaningful as it gets. Now, even if the Colts lose this game, I also want to impress upon people. I mean, look, it certainly is a massive blow to the playoff hopes, obviously, but I think the bigger picture, and you just hit on this, the bigger picture should not be, we shouldn't lose sight of the bigger picture, mm-hmm. even if they lose this Cowboys game. I mean, the fact that they're in the position they're in, I think this season was never about winning this season, you know, winning big. It was about getting on the right track, right?
Right.
So they're on the right track. That has been made clear weeks ago, right? Mm-hmm. The question now is only, well, how far can they take this? But in terms of what the theme and what the goal of this season was, they've already checked that box.
Mm-hmm.
That really was about getting on the right path. Well, they're on the right path, and now it's just a matter of maximizing it and taking it. You know, they're playing with house money at this point,
mm-hmm.
and just trying to see how far they can take this thing. But don't lose sight of the future here, the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is they're a team with an exceedingly bright future and a team with all kinds of potential to improve in this coming offseason. So I'd be thinking, I wouldn't be bummed out necessarily if they lose this game as a fan. I think, look, you're going to be upset. You're going to be disappointed, clearly. But the point is, this, in terms of what we were really hoping for this season, oh, they've accomplished that and more. And they've got a chance to even do more than that.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I mean, the Cowboys come in at 8-5 right now after an overtime win over the Eagles. And, you know, folks, it just really makes you feel, if the Colts can get themselves up to 8-6 with this win that it's an exciting time. And like you said, the bigger picture is the ideal route to really be thinking about this. Be hopeful that the Colts can get themselves into the postseason, because they will and should be considered one of the most dangerous teams. They cannot get into the postseason without winning at least two of these. So they're going to have to win at least eight of their last 10 games. And that is something that will be spread around nationally on every channel. They will be talking about Andrew Luck. They'll be talking about the defense forcing turnovers, and they'll be talking about the offensive line. Those are things that they have continued to harp on all year. The Colts need the running game to show up, and they need to be able to make some big plays defensively as well. And they need to make a few of them, in my opinion, and just maintain everything that they have continued to do. So this is a really exciting time, honestly, for Colts fans. I think it's a really exciting time for the team, the franchise, the city, everything. So I'm excited for this game. I'm excited for their final three. And it looks like it's going to be a really nice end of the season here, because the AFC wildcard, the race actually is really interesting to watch in itself. You know, you've got teams kind of like, Denver or Baltimore, or just some of these other teams that are right there in the hunt, and you see them kind of rising and falling too. So you see that the Colts have a real shot at making this wild card berth. So it's going to be a great time. Steven, thank you again for joining me tonight, my man. Looking forward to this game. Hopefully the Colts can pull one out here. Do you have any what would be your prediction for this game?
So I'm going to go with the Colts, but, do I feel great about it? Maybe not, but I mean, look, I think the fact that they're at home does, I think, make a difference. I do think there may be a few too many Cowboys fans in the building. I do worry about that, but I do think that being at home gives them a little bit of an edge. I mentioned the Eberflus factor. It's probably not the deciding factor, but I think it helps, and it's a close game. I think it's a close matchup, two teams that match up well. So in games like that, the little things matter. So you're talking home field. Mm-hmm. You're talking about, you know, any sort of advantage in terms of scouting, which they have. So I think those little things like that, and then the big one, they have the quarterback advantage. And in this league, I mean, that's 50% of it sometimes, right?
Yep.
So you put all that together, and I really do think I got to go with the Colts. Now, some of the Cowboys' recent games are just really impressive, and, you know, the Saints win comes to mind. And I'm like, man, there's something going on there. It's legitimate, right? Like, mm-hmm. they're not a flash in the pan. This team's legitimate. But the Colts are as well. And I think this streak they've been on, they got their confidence back in Houston. Had they lost the Houston game, I'd feel differently. But I think I think momentum's a real thing. And I think they have some of it now. And I think this team understands the stakes. So I'm going with the Colts. I think it's a close one. I think it's sort of a similar game to last week. I think it's a 24, 23 type of game. I think it's going to come down to who has the ball last and who makes a play, who gets a stop at the end. It's going to be one of those types of games, a one possession game, I feel like.
I am in very much in the same boat as you. And I look at the way that they've played on the road, and I look at the way that the Colts have been playing at home, and the Colts have been killing it, you know, for a lack of better words. At home, they've been scoring on their last five home games. They've scored 33 points a game, and the Cowboys have been pretty bad on the road. I mean, they have two games all year on the road that they've scored more than 20 points on the road, and that was Philly in week 10 and Atlanta in week 11 with 22 points, and everything else is teens and single digits. I do not trust the Cowboys on the road. I think the Colts should, as long as the Colts can come out hot and not stall for the first quarter of the game, I think I'm going to give them a full touchdown here. I mean, this is ridiculous sounding probably, but the Cowboys have legitimately played like crap on the road, you know, in this year. So I mean, they lost their first three on the road, sorry, their first four on the road, and then they won two. That's it. That's what they've done. And their last two road games were in weeks 10 and 11. So I think going with three straight home games here for the Cowboys and then going on the road again, this is a different change, or, you know, a change of scenery, and I don't think it benefits them. So I'm going with the Colts by a full touchdown. I'm going to say 34-27 here. And I think that that's even a little rich, honestly, for the Cowboys there. So, you know what, and let me change that. I'm going to go 27-20 because I don't think the Cowboys are going to score that much, but I don't think the Colts necessarily are going to put up 34 either. So I'm going to give the Colts a full touchdown in this one. So let's hope that they can pull through. It should be a really fun game to watch. So once again, Steven, thank you for joining me on the show, man. It's always a good time. Appreciate you being on.
All right, hey, man, no problem. Thanks for having me. I think we got one of the biggest games and one of the most attractive games on the schedule this week, so I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely, I agree. Make sure that you guys are all getting to the podcast on iTunes, rating and reviewing it. We've got a lot of good shows for you guys on there. So, I mean, Steven and I both have shows. Chris Blystone has been doing the Dark Horses where he's doing the playoff picture. We've got a lot of good stuff with the Colts film room on there as well. Some of the recaps from from the teams that the Colts will be playing in the future, their past week's games, all that good stuff. Make sure you guys are checking out Stampede Blue for all your Indianapolis Colts news and analysis, and check out Steven's work there on The Athletic as well. So thank you guys all for joining us here on the show, and we'll talk to you next time.
Hello, I'm Ashley Carmen.
I'm Caitlin Tiffany.
We're the hosts of Why'd You Push That Button, The Verge's show about all the choices technology forces us to make.
We're back for season 3, talking about questions like, why do you delete your tweets?
And why do you type in lowercase letters that make you seem like a serial killer?
And why are you on an exclusive dating app?
You're not that special. We're releasing a new episode every Wednesday, and you can find us anywhere you typically find podcasts, which is Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts. So go ahead and subscribe and check us out.